What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and gifted musician, and he is also one of the top bass players in the country and has performed and collaborated with some of the biggest names in the music industry, from Stevie Wonder to Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, and Celine Dion. He is currently the bass player for smooth jazz group 4Play. Please put your hands together and welcome bassist, music producer, and songwriter, Nathan East. How's it going, Nathan?
Thanks very much for that incredible introduction. The check's in the mail.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure, man. I can't say enough about you, but I had to cut it short, man, you know.
Well, I appreciate anything, you know. We've seen worse.
Oh, man. No, seriously, Nathan, thank you so much for coming in and, you know, taking your time and chopping it up with me. It's truly an honor, man. And, you know, I've been a fan of yours since day one. I followed your work with 4Play. And, you know, I just can't say enough about your musicianship, man.
Well, we really appreciate it. And we never imagined that, you know, almost two decades later, after starting this little quartet, that that support would just continue for so long, you know.
Wow. You know, you got the new CD out, Let's Touch the Sky, another timeless record to add to your arsenal with 4Play, man.
Well, you know, we just end up being very, very proud of the fact that there's still a forum out there for us to go in there and make music and do what we do, and that people appreciate it. And, you know, again, it's just in a progressive time frame and period in our society and in music and Minneapolis and all over, it's just it's great when you get to do what you love to do. And, you know, this is one of the things that we spent our life doing, and it's just nice when it's received so well.
It is, man. You know, like I talked to you earlier, you know, I am a musician, a keyboardist, and a music producer, and, you know, listening to and playing music as long as I have, you know, I still remain that student of music and first and foremost a fan of other musicians. And you guys, you know, demonstrated what to be a musician and really holding that fort together as a band, you know, because a lot of times, you know, bands come together, but they break apart and everyone's going their separate ways. And, you know, you're really losing a good thing. But 4Play just really kept it together all these years, man.
Yeah, it's just been fun. And we, you know, it's easy when, you know, you're with your guys, your comrades, they're all trying to operate at the highest level, you know, and keeping their game tight. So I feel very fortunate about that.
Great. You know, one of the tracks I listen to pretty diligently, man, is Third Degree. Your combination with Chuck Lowe, man, like I said, that combination right there just couldn't be stopped. You know, you got a lot of funk bass slap chops in there, man, with, you know, Chuck Lowe and his signature chops. You know, a lot of dynamics in that song, man. It's just one of the funkier songs on the album.
Well, you know, he really came to the party with his guns loaded. You know, we asked him if he wanted to join the band, and he jumped in there, you know, and with his compositions and playing, and I think he did a fantastic job on this first record with us.
Oh, totally, man. It was so much in the pocket. It was just like, oh, man, I just instantly gravitated when I heard it, man.
Fantastic. Well, that's the desired result we want, you know.
Definitely. Now, Nathan, I want to take you back to some of your earlier works with 4Play. I think it's one of the songs that you could actually compose for the group, 101 Eastbound.
Oh, yeah, huh?
Oh, man. Today, that still remains probably one of my most favorite tracks out of 4Play.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and that's a song my brother and I wrote, you know, again, 20 years ago, and we brought it to the guys and just were so impressed with the way everybody interpreted it and delivered it, you know.
Right. You know, one of these songs, you know, it just stays in my head, and I think you guys composed an E-flat minor. And, you know, as a keyboardist, I just love playing the E-flat, and it just really stood out to me. There's so many different elements and moods in that song. You know what I mean?
Fantastic. Yeah, well, see, now I know you really are paying attention to it. And with the key and everything. Yeah, it's fun to be able to have some guys that you can write for, and you just have no idea how your music is going to turn out, but you just know it's going to be cool.
Right. Now, when did you start as a bass player, Nathan? I mean, I consider you as a veteran, just because you've been out there for so long. Not because of your age, man. It's just because you're so seasoned as a musician. You know, in that long journey that you took over the years, you know, I kind of look at you as the go-to guy as a bass player. You know, so give me some history of when you started and, you know, how you've emerged into the seasoned musician that you are now.
Well, I was 14-year-old kid, you know, in high school and getting, you know, getting my feet wet when I discovered the bass. I actually picked one up on the altar of this church where my brothers were making music, and it was a divine feeling of kind of knowing that this might be something for me, you know, and for me to do. And by the time I was 16 years old, I was touring the country with Barry White and the Love Unlimited Orchestra, playing in places like the Apollo Theater, Madison Square Garden in New York, John F. Kennedy Center for the Arts in D.C. And it was, you know, once I got bit by that bug, I was absolutely just, I knew that this was what I wanted to do.
Wow. You know, so who were your musical influences on that journey of? I mean, who did you listen to and started really pulling the chops from as a bass player and really making it your own?
Well, they were definitely role models and heroes as I was starting, you know, I mean, on the jazz side, you know, all the recordings that had Ray Brown, like the Quincy Jones recordings, and Ron Carter, and people like Charlie Mingus, those guys were really laying it down on upright. And then on the more R&B or funk side of things, then I had people like James Jamerson, all the Motown records, and my ear just gravitated to those genius bass lines, you know. And you just heard that kind of stuff, Chuck Rainey. And then, you know, people like Larry Graham and you know, Earth, Wind & Fire's Verdine White. So those were the kind of bands and things that I started gravitating toward. And ear just went to the bass, you know, when I heard the music.
Definitely. You brought up Larry Graham, man, someone who I had a chance to interview, which was another honorary interview for me. Just
wow.
Because, man, he was that foundation back in the days. I mean, this is late 60s, early 70s when he really started doing that funk slap bass, man, and really cultivated into a movement, you know.
Right.
So it's just, you know, I love talking to different bass players and just to see where they're pulling from for their chops, you know what I mean? And, you know, he's always a guy who's always thrown in a mix in conversations.
Well, I'll never forget when the guys in my band, they just said, oh, man, wait till you hear it. We just heard this guy in Oakland, Larry Graham, and it... He makes the bass sound like a drums and piano and everything else, you know. And that's, you know, once I heard him, I knew what they were talking about, you know.
Right.
And, you know, those are the kind of people, you know, Jaco Pastorius, where you took the instrument to another level. And so it was just fun to be exposed to that kind of music.
Definitely. You know, Nathan, I want to talk to you a little bit, man, about the development of ear, you know, how we hear things musically as a musician, even as a fan. But, you know, specifically as a musician, I've been playing in church for years as, you know, the main keyboardist. And, you know, finding chops on stage in a live audience sometimes is really where I can find a lot of creative edge in my compositions. And then, you know, bringing back that composition, creative style into the studio environment, you know, where things are more controlled and settled. Where do you find that creative zone for really stepping outside the box? Is it for you in the studio, or is it really on stage where you're doing that improv with your band members?
It's sort of a combination of both. When you're making music, you know, obviously on stage you get to do whatever you want, create, and you can either play like the record or come up with something new. But what I've been very fortunate to do is have the opportunity to play with some of the greatest innovators, like Herbie Hancock and you know, all my partners in 4Play. And when you hear the way these guys just push the envelope when they play, it changes the way you think. And so really there's a conscious effort, whether I'm in the studio or on stage, to find some notes that maybe I didn't play before, or just find a different way of playing it, or just, you know, what can I come up with? And every now and then you get lucky.
Definitely. No, I hear you, man. You know, you're in a specific rhythm, could be a specific tempo, man. And, you know, you guys are used to chopping it up the same way. But, someone on the band member is just going to step outside that box and, you know, take you to Mars for a minute, you know what I mean? And it's just kind of nice how you guys can bounce off each other's creativity flow, you know? And I just think that's just the hottest thing as musicians.
And you know, I mean, some people are just, every time you play with them and you're looking, you know, like guys like Herbie, you just, your jaw's dropping everything he plays, you know? And I'm just saying, how do you think like that, you know?
Right.
And the bottom line is having the ability to you know, creatively just stay open.
Sure. Now, funk has been my foundation as a musician since day one. I mean, it's just something that moves me, just like jazz. You know, the blend of jazz and funk together for me is a winning combination. You know, how has funk impacted your style as a bass player? Because I hear so much funk elements in your chops. You know, the dynamics that are coming in, everything's just on pocket and on timing perfectly. You know, give me some of the reasons why you're pulling a lot of those funk chops in your bass playing.
Well, it's fun to mix it up, and when I'm playing music, I'm kind of trying to combine as many different elements as I can, you know. So if I'm playing a little rock and roll or whatever, I try to add a little bit of jazz or funk to that mix, and vice versa, where you just kind of get a hybrid of it all, and so the style sort of becomes a combination of elements. And I'm one of those guys that when I go to the ice cream store, I can never decide on the flavor, so I'll get about three or four at the same time. and for me, what that does is just it brings the world closer, the worlds of music, so that you don't have so many different, you know, what I don't like is so many different labels, and I usually try to shoot for more of a something that's universal, you know. So I try to mix it up, and by having listened to a lot of the funksters, like I say, when Larry Graham and Bootsy and these guys came out, it just turned everybody's head around, you know.
Sure. You know, it's cool, man. I think as a musician, I think the ultimate goal, you know, I think as you mature as a musician, I think the goal should be more versatile. Really start getting out of your genre. I mean, if you listen to R&B primarily for 20 years, eventually you're going to trap yourself in a box creatively. You know what I mean? Because there's certain chord progressions and arrangements that are really happening that's out of the R&B field. You know what I mean? So you really got to start pulling in the jazz and classical and maybe some of the rock elements. And like you said, start really putting them into your own style. You know, because I feel that my ear really developed when I started listening to other styles of music. You know,
right.
And you try to stay young, you know, because I started tracking when I was about 14. You know, so I was really trying to capture the young audience of my peers, but also trying to get the attention of the my older adult musicians, you know, to really show the musicianship. And to capture those moments, man, I really had to start branching outside of hip-hop and R&B, getting towards jazz and rock and contemporary jazz and, you know, just really bringing those styles into my own foundation. I just thought that was just one of the elements.
Right, exactly. And you know, it's all about the evolution of the instrument, you know, and each person has their own way of doing that.
Right. Now, for tracking your bass, Nathan, I want to talk a little bit about your signal chain, you know, before you're actually hitting your DAW or your tape, you know, whatever preference you're recording to. Do you use any external hardware, or are you doing a lot of internal processing now?
I have a box that we developed at Yamaha, and it's called the NE-1, and it's an EQ that I never record without it, you know, and I run my bass through that, and it adds a certain fatness to it, so I love using that. But other than that, that's the only thing I use. I go straight in.
Really? No pre's or compression or anything? Just going
no
straight?
No preamps, compression. I leave everything else up to the engineer, which most of the time they say they're not doing anything to my instrument.
Right. So you don't like a lot of color on top of your bass?
More no, I like the pure. I like the nice, pure, full sound of it. And if the song calls for any other color, which a lot of times it doesn't, then, you know, can have what we want.
Right. Now, are you playing strictly four bass, five string, or six string? And I mean, have you been going up the octaves?
I've been doing mainly five and six.
Right. I mean, because it seems like, man, it's just adding more strings to the bass every year, man.
Yeah, well, all you're doing is increasing the range of the instrument, basically.
And, sure.
That's what we and I, you know, you always want to go lower and higher.
Right. Just to give you that, like I said, that range. Do you tune your strings as the E, A, D, G, B, E, or are you tuning them down? Or?
I'm starting with a low B and ending with a high C.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's
so B,
real nice.
E, A, D, G, and then C.
Wow. Wow, that's got to be a really nice tone for that low B.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, are you tracking in Pro Tools or using Logic or Cubase, Nuendo, or?
I'm using Pro Tools.
Strictly. Oh, nice, nice. You know, what's nice with Pro Tools, man, I think for a lot of live musicians who really track in the live field, not MIDI generated, Pro Tools is the way to go. You know, I just like asking different musicians what their preference is. And, you know, a lot of guys are just really used to the Pro Tools environment for tracking, even pre-mixing their tracks before they send them off.
Right, exactly. And that, and I'm getting a lot of, you know, times where I'm recording for sessions for Japan or Germany or London where they just send the tracks and we just pop them into our Pro Tools and hit it, record it, and send it back.
Nice. So what is on the musical agenda for ending year of 2010 and, you know, merging over into 2011, Nathan? What do we have on plate?
Well, 4Play is going to go out in support of our new CD, Let's Touch the Sky, and we really are enjoying, you know, playing. We've incorporated a couple numbers into the show so far, but I'm sure there's going to be several songs from this CD incorporated into our live performance. So we have a trip to Japan scheduled for December, and we'll be up at Blues Alley in Seattle the first week of November, and then we'll be heading back east to do some shows. It's all on our website, 4playjazz.com. And sort of simultaneously, I've been working on Anita Baker's new record. She asked me to step in as a producer this time, as well as bass, and we've written some songs together. So currently producing new Anita Baker, which should be out first part of 2011.
Oh, nice. You know, Anita Baker to me is just a timeless singer. You know, her tone is always going to be relevant to me as an artist. You know, her style, the way she can get on stage, man, it just really captured the audience. I mean, she takes ownership of that stage every time she performs.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is, man. And, you know, to hear her studio albums is just phenomenal. I mean, I'm just a huge follower of hers. And again, I just can't say enough about Anita. And to have you producing on the album, oh, man, it's going to be a killer combination.
No, we're having a lot of fun. And it's just so exciting to be working in that capacity with to me, one of the finest singers, you know, that we have on the planet.
And she's so versatile. She can take your jazz, she can take your R&B, adult contemporary.
She can go to church on you if you want.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, she'll take you there, man.
She'll take you there. And so for me, she has just such a fertile career that could just go on forever, you know, because if you think about it, a lot of these songs coming up on three decades old, and I was just in D.C. over the weekend, and before 9 o'clock in the morning, I was going through the radio dial, and I already heard two of her songs.
Wow!
And it's just classic music, and I get the same response worldwide. You know, you mention her name, and people have their favorite songs, their favorite moments, and it's just a joy to have become such good friends with her, and to be and making music with her still.
Definitely. Now, your role as a producer, Nathan, I mean, what are some of the other works you took on as a producer? I mean, outside of 4Play's work, of course.
Yeah, outside of 4Play's, I mean, there's been various projects. There's a project that was a tribute to Billie Holiday, and it went along with her book about her life, and that was for Random House in the recent years. And it was good because I had a chance to produce people like Babyface and some great artists, Patty Austin, and some great artists that participated on the record. And so between that, I've done a Radio Shack launched a little label for Christmas that did a Christmas CD. And again, we used called Smooth and Soulful Christmas, and they sold it in the stores. So we used again, calling a lot of our friends, Natalie Cole and people like that, to sing Take Six.
Wow.
And so I tell you what, when you get to work with good, strong artists like that, there's nothing like it.
Oh, man, they make you step up your game just being around them alone. I mean, like you say, around the seasoned artists, that creativity is just going to open for me at least. You know, it seems like, man,
absolutely.
It's just like it's endless. Like, man, I want you guys to go.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's just there's nothing like working with people that just bring their A game. And it's really something very special.
You know, as long as you've been producing and writing, Nathan, when did you feel your ear start to really evolve to that level, I call it, where it's just seasoned, it's that it factor? I mean, did it take you a couple of years to develop that, or was it kind of a natural thing for you growing up?
Well, I have to say it was a pretty natural thing. I've always had a good ear and been able to really hone in on the music, which just has been a blessing for me over the years. We use our ears, and if they're really in tune, it's just the best tool that we have to make music.
It is. You know, I talk to a lot of up-and-coming musicians in my local area, and they always ask, like, man, Spot, how do you hear a song right away and in your ear will just to play it? You know, a lot of times I tell them, say, well, experience comes with one thing, but a lot of it, too, is just, you know, the ear, the way I hear it. You know, and, you know, be able to separate the instruments that's going within the song. You know, a lot of times as an average listener, we're hearing the whole entire thing at one time, you know, but as musicians, you know, if your ear really gets tuned, you can really start focusing on the piano parts, the bass parts, the drumming, you know, the vocals. And, you know, it's just, I think it's really a development thing, you know, like you said, at an early age. You can develop it growing up, but, you know, it's just really nice to have that head start as a young musician and really train your ears to hear a lot bigger things and more complicated things later on, you know.
It really is. And my 10-year-old son is playing piano, and he has perfect pitch, and you can just put your fist down on a group of notes and he'll tell you what every note is, and it's amazing to watch and to see that he can hear a piece of music and go over to the piano and just play.
It makes sense. Well, you know, it makes sense to him. You know what I mean? It's just, it's hard to explain, you know, the perfect pitch, how it works, and, you know, how to apply that into your playing. But, you know, it's just like I tell a lot of people, it's just those harmonics just really make sense to me. It feels right. You know, it's just, I just feel it. You know, it's like I can't explain it, but it's just a feeling thing I personally feel.
Actually, when I was in school, I used to use it to kind of make a little money because people didn't believe I could tell you what key a song was in. I was on a radio and stuff, so we'd, you know, end up getting lunch money or $5 here and there.
Wow.
My friends started pimping me a little bit.
I bet, man.
But it's a blessing, you know, and something that is a tool that, you know, stays with us.
Definitely.
For our lives, you know, that we can take advantage of.
Oh, man, I'm totally grateful, man. You know, I can talk about that all day long, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Nathan, it's been an honor and a true pleasure for you coming on my show. I'd definitely love to have you back and talk about your new endeavor, especially with the Anita Baker album coming up next year.
We'd love to come back and check you guys out on the show. And, anytime, we'll look forward to that project, and we'll just keep them coming, you know.
Sounds good, Nathan. Well, you have a safe 2010, and best of luck to you in 2011.
Appreciate the call, and hello to all our friends out there.
There we go. All right, Nathan, you take it easy, man.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye.
And a big shout-out and thank you to Nathan East for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, I can't talk enough about Nathan, man. He's just a phenomenal musician. You know, 20 years with 4Play, and aside from that, he's really a great producer as well. You know, on his way producing and working with Anita Baker, you know, so I can't wait to hear that record. And I know it's just going to be phenomenal, to say the least. And for more information on Nathan East, you need to check out his website at www.nathaneast.com. Again, www.nathaneast.com. And for more information on 4Play, hit the website up at www.4playjazz.com. www.4playjazz.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spud2tight.com. www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast. So if you have a Mac or PC, an iPhone or iPod, you can hit the iTunes store up, type in the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show, and it's off Poor Play's new CD, Let's Touch the Sky. And the title of the track is called Love TKO, and it's a remake of Teddy Pendergrass featuring Reuben Studdard. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Trying to take control of the love, love took control of me. Cause you lose all thoughts, sense of time, and have a change of mind. Taking the bumps and the bruises of all the things of a two-time loser. See, I try to hold on, my faith is gone. It's just another sad song. I think I better let it go, baby. Said I think I better let it go, yeah. Let it go, baby. Looks like another love TKO. Oh, oh baby.